Well, kia ora tātou and welcome back. In today's podcast, I'm going to be talking to Emma Krecker about all things digital marketing. But what you'll find very quickly from my kōrero with Emma is that you can't separate the digital from the traditional. So even though she has spent so much of her career focused on digital that she is seen as Ōtātahi Christchurch's one of their leading lights when it comes to innovative digital marketing, she has to underpin this with all the traditional elements, knowledge, theory, background that comes with traditional marketing. So all that stuff has to come together before you even start thinking about the actual medium, the way that you use digital. Now, there's going to be times where those things mold and merge together, and Emma talks a little bit about that. But again, very much a marketer that is driven by values, driven by what inspires her, what encourages her, what gives her hope for the future. And as a result of that, you see that through the work she does, even though it's not in a sustainability sort of organization or anything like that, commercial organizations, but you can see that need to connect, that need to be relational, that need to be supportive, the need to be ethical come through in all the work that she does. So hopefully you enjoyed this chat with Emma. Hopefully you learned something from it. Ka kite anō. So kia ora tātou, welcome back. As you know, my name is Ekan Ve, and today I am talking all things digital marketing with the amazing Emma Krecker. So Emma has a background in digital, both in with the YHA, as well as with Giessen Wines, as well as being part of the Marketing Association Southern Hub and doing various talks in that area. And despite being a former student of mine, she's actually been quite successful. And so it's really good to have her back at UC to chat about some of the things that she has learned in the digital marketing space, but also about life in general. So kia ora, Emma, thank you for coming in. It's great to have you. As always, I like to start with a bit of whakawhanaungatanga. So tell us a bit more about you as a person. What kind of drew you down the line, I guess, of marketing to start with, and then into digital sort of space as time went on?
Kia ora. Thank you for having me. As I can't mention, my name is Emma. I have been fortunate to almost always have known that I wanted to be a marketer. My high school up in Auckland, where I grew up, had a really good program of sort of optional subjects. So I think year 9 was my first business studies class as a 13-year-old. And that had sort of a nice introductory mix of, you know, a little bit of economics and a little bit of sort of business, generalist kind of education in there. And that was something I actually continued all through high school. So when I first was considering university subjects, marketing was definitely something that was on my radar to begin with. When I did move down to Christchurch, I came to UC to study, and initially my hesitation was actually how much I could handle doing the economics and the info systems and the, you know, all of the nitty-gritty accounting type papers in my first year, but I overcame that, and in pursuit of recognizing that actually marketing was where I wanted to be.
That's so cool. I mean, it's almost the complete opposite. I'm sure I've told this story 1,000 times, but there was no marketing at high school for me. I'm good 10, 20 years older than you, I guess. But it's kind of a, I went to university thinking I wanted to do economics and accounting. And I did a semester of each and thought, I'm never doing that again. But stumbled upon marketing whilst at university. And I'm like, I fell in love with that. And it just really matched with my passion for psychology and all this other stuff. So for you to go, I know marketing exists, I will struggle through the economics and accounting to get there. That's really cool. Yeah. And in particular with regards to digital, so you didn't do digital at UC at the time because we didn't have digital.
No, we didn't really have it. It was something that we were conscious of the need for while I was at UC, and something that I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think our master's cohort, sort of the feedback from our cohort helped develop what then became the digital program, which is really cool. But I struggle to imagine a way you could start in marketing without encountering digital. And I think with students coming through these days as well, generally there is such a good baseline degree of digital literacy that I honestly feel that the divide between digital marketing and traditional marketing will continue to fall away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there was a time early on where it was really seen as this is the new thing. We get to get rid of traditional and move into digital. But like you say, they're almost becoming one and the same. Like you can't do one without the other.
Absolutely.
Definitely seeing a shift, I guess, from the traditional into the digital with regards to things like not many people use coupons anymore, but they will have digital sort of deals and things like that.
Yeah.
But there will always be a space, I guess, for both as time goes on.
And I guess the caveat I would add is that you know, there are plenty of digital specialization type roles. My first role out of university was actually for a digital agency, and I wound up looking after Google AdWords. But that was very much something that you know, I sort of said, I'm quite happy to learn this. I know all of the strategy and the principles of marketing, but actually applying that in that specific tool was something that I had to learn on the job and be taught. That's an example of being able to go down a very specific path. But it does require still a good mesh of skills across sort of copywriting and placement and the strategy within that tool. So, you know, without those traditional marketing skills, you're not going to be a good specialist in digital to begin with.
That's a fantastic bit of content for our next marketing campaign as a university as well. So I will steal that. Going into that digital sort of space, and this is a place that I get very frustrated. A lot of people who maybe don't know enough about the area think it's a super cheap alternative to traditional marketing. Oh, so I don't need to spend $40,000 on creating a TV ad. I can just do a Facebook story and that'll be enough, or an Instagram story or a Facebook video and that'll be enough. What are the sort of complexities you've seen in your experience that kind of it might be cheaper on this end, but actually it's way more expensive in these other spaces?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea that it's as cheap is a misconception, because what you're paying for is people's time. You're not necessarily putting the same budget into a campaign up front the way that you would pay for a $40,000 TV commercial. But, you know, be damned if you don't test and trial 8 different reels before one takes off, you know. So you're very much still paying for it. It's just in human resource rather than necessarily budget. And that space on its own is getting more punishing. You know, Facebook really is a pay-to-play space these days. But I think the idea that it's easy sort of ties into that. You know, people go, oh, I'll just throw up an Instagram story, as you said. But having something that is good, has consistency, has strategy behind it that actually resonates, is different to just posting a meme and hoping that people like it because it's funny, and then you never see those people on your Instagram again.
And I guess it can be, again, maybe not in your experience, but in my experience, because maybe I'm not as good at this as you, can be super disheartening, because you put all your effort into one area and it doesn't go anywhere. But then sometimes a meme does go crazy sometimes, and suddenly those do become regular customers going forward, or whatever else it might be. And so it can be quite hit and miss sometimes as well.
Definitely.
Which I guess traditional media, you don't get the same feedback from as quickly, so you never know whether it's been a hit and miss.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the data side of it, knowing whether it has resonated, is something that I love about digital. But it is a constant learning exercise, not only in knowing what resonates, which can change as customers change and as trends come through, but also as the platforms change. You know, that that role running Google Ads that I mentioned, you know, the platform would change every month, if not more. You know, just last week I would have found a change in the Facebook platform when I was intending to set up an ad with particular settings that are no longer available, for example. So there's several aspects of constant having to readapt and learn that really underlie that digital marketing space.
And I think I caught up with you maybe a couple of years after you graduated and said, what's one thing you wish you'd done more of now you've been at work a couple of years? And I think you said, more maths. I try to avoid the maths, but actually now I'm in the business world, especially with the analytics side and with digital, when there's so much data. Is that still true? I mean, I know that Google is always trying to provide savvy options for people so they don't have to do the analysis themselves. Here's a graph. But surely there's still a lot of understanding around the analytics that's there.
I think the difference I see is that it's maths with a story, right? You know, it's numbers that tell you what's going on, and without that knowledge of what's going on, you know, that's something that you don't necessarily get from a billboard, for example, is how people have responded to it, the number of people that have seen it, although I will say tech is changing, you can definitely do that now. But you know, without that feedback, you don't get the opportunity to optimize, and that optimization and that tweaking is what really tells you whether the strategy is working.
And it's, I guess, one of the amazing benefits that digital has, when you can do that A/B testing. You can put out two ads to very similar audiences on two different cities and see which one works better, and then run that one nationally, which was very difficult to do in traditional media without doing full surveys and things like that.
Absolutely.
Even though the tech is getting better.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, speaking to the point we were discussing before around, you know, your investment up front can be heavy. Mm. When I'm setting up a campaign, I might task a designer up with 5 or 6 different ads, throw them all in a single ad set, and let the algorithm choose for itself what's going to resonate. Within that, then I'm writing 5 different headlines, 5 different, you know, descriptions underneath to go with the ad. So there's a whole suite of different pairings that are in there up front. But then seeing what performs means that next time I go to adjust the creative, I can say, hey, actually, can we try this same copy line but with a different image or what have you, and get really granular with it, as opposed to necessarily, yeah, having to know everything up front. There's very much a process of iterative testing that I think is important.
For that ability to learn, do, change quickly, mm-hmm. and then learn a whole new platform within a month is kind of some of the benefits that I think young people in particular when it comes to technology have, in that you've grown up with technology. I am pre-internet days. I remember dial-up turning up. Well, I don't think you've ever seen a time without the interwebs a little bit.
I do remember dial-up.
I don't think we should make an assumption that all young people are great with tech either, but there's almost it's a second nature thing for some people, and so it becomes easier to adapt quickly to a new platform or whatever else it might be.
Certainly, yeah. When you already know the etiquette of a platform, it's a lot easier to then put a strategy hat on because you've got some experience. You're not starting completely from scratch.
For sure.
So that level of baseline digital literacy is definitely an asset.
For sure. I didn't write this question down in advance, so I apologize if it's a curly one. You talked about some of the campaigns you developed and things like that. Is there one in particular that stood out for you and said, I really like that one, I will keep going back to that one being a real win for me? Or was there one that was the opposite? You thought this one's going to fly, but actually it just flopped.
Some of the more successful work I've done recently in my time at Geese and Wines, I was spending a lot of time working on our 0% wine launches. Understandably, the complete opposite of what we would normally do as a wine company. So there were definitely some learnings there, and we spent a lot of time planning for that launch. There was a really strong investment in developing our positioning and our copy and things up front before we launched. But what stands out to me about that as a successful campaign is the connectivity that we experienced on social. So this was our first big direct-to-consumer launch, and a large part of it was handled through social media, pushing people to landing pages, which we then built, and then actually fulfilling the orders ourselves. So all quite new for the business. And I guess we wound up with people jumping in on social with lots of questions and comments that we were then able to address on the fly and go, oh yeah, okay, we're seeing this question a lot, maybe we should add that information to the landing page. Traditionally in the wine industry, there's a lot of third parties in the middle, so the idea of a brand talking directly to consumer is quite rare for that space. It was just really interesting to reflect that if we'd had a third party in the middle, we don't think it would have gone anywhere near as well.
Sure.
But yeah, the reason that it stands out to me is because of the direct connection within that campaign. There were people asking us questions, and I was really meticulous about being in there and responding to almost everyone's comments, you know, even if it was just why. We got that question a lot, and I had a suite of different answers. You know, we developed a process guide for responding so that if I wasn't on deck, someone else could handle it, so that the copy was consistent, the tone was consistent, we got really great engagement because for every person asking why, we had someone else chiming in and saying, oh my God, this is amazing, I can't drink because of XYZ health reasons, or I'm cutting back, or what have you. It's so good to finally have an option. And so then engaging with those people, you know, is very important to me to turn around and say, thank you for sharing that. Like, that's a really lovely thing to hear. And we're going to pass that feedback on to our winemakers to reinforce this work that they're doing.
Because, like you say, the idea of providing non-alcoholic or 0% wines probably is not what gets a winemaker out of bed in the morning. But maybe when they see there's a market, but also they're like, actually, people are enjoying our wines without the alcohol. You don't need the alcohol to enjoy our wines. That's probably pretty cool.
I think they liked the challenge.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they would necessarily be drinking the 0% themselves all that often. But hey, then it also spawned the spin-off was being able to use the alcohol that was extracted from the 0% wine, and we now also have Strange Nature Gin.
I was going to say, that would make a brilliant gin. What are you doing this
business? It's delicious, can recommend.
Strange Nature Gin. All right, this is not a product placement, but I will be buying some Strange Nature Gin. Go on.
I'm just going to say, as a complete disclaimer, I am no longer working for the company, so genuinely not applying it. I just actually like the product.
Brilliant. You've kind of almost answered this question a little bit, but I wonder if we can go into a bit more depth. A lot of digital is done through social media these days. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the background stuff that's through Google and the SEO, which is still powerful. Mm-hmm. But the actual stuff that consumers see a lot of the time is social media. In the world of TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all these sorts of areas, and the traditional model has been to put up ads, mm-hmm. which tend to not fly so well. Mm-hmm. How do you cut through a lot of that noise? You already just said, well, by being social, by asking and answering questions, having a corridor with people when they come and building a relationship. Is that the sort of approach you've tried to take, or has it been a bit of a both, ads and relationship building? Or
there has definitely been both. Something I've seen work really well as a strategy is having an organic post that then we're able to have some genuine conversation on, and then actually boosting that for reach, for engagement and for conversion, sometimes all at the same time. That's been a real fun thing to play with. But I think it is that connection that makes it, you know, that's what I'm aiming for in that space of social media is about being social, as you've said. I think connection is a need that a lot of people have that they don't necessarily acknowledge that they have. It's also one of my personal values. So that and authenticity are really important to me in creating that space. Yeah. I also think of, you know, I had an example recently where a friend said to me, oh, I've got some TikTok ad credit. Like, what should I spend it on? I mean, easy. Make 3 TikToks. See which one resonates. Boost that one.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point in trying to do something completely out of left field that's advertising based if you're not actually talking to people. So I think the idea of, you know, adding value for people or solving a problem really helps with that connectedness, because then there's a genuine reason for talking to them. You're not just putting stuff out into the airwaves and hoping for the best.
And especially, like you say, when you can get that reasonably quick feedback, you don't need to wait a month to see which one resonated. Within a day, you're pretty sure which one's resonating. Then you can add a little bit of extra power behind it, get the boost there. And do it. What were some of the challenges in that space, though? I remember really early on, so we're talking about 12, 15 years ago, working with some companies in Christchurch about their social media engagement, and one of them said, well, we treat it like any other role, it's a 9-to-5 job and 3 days a week max sort of thing, while another company said, actually no, we have to be responsive, and when people need us, we are online. And so there was one of the, I think their digital marketer at the time was based in Iceland, and that way when New Zealand was sleeping, the workers were sleeping but people were online, the person in Iceland can start to respond to those sorts of questions. Does it become taxing? Does it become draining being always on and relational, or does it become almost second nature for you as well?
A bit of both. I think for me, copywriting comes really naturally. That's one of my stronger skill sets. So the idea of being able to have a good yarn with someone online is not something that I personally find taxing in and of itself. When you're doing it all the time, certainly. And I think it's also really important to set up boundaries. One thing that we reconciled with in my time at Giessen was very much, you know, the business might have that desire to be on and responsive, but at the end of the day, it's wine. We're not brain surgeons. Nothing is going to go wrong if we leave people until after the weekend, for example, to respond. So there is a balancing act there. Where I see that be more difficult is when you're running campaigns. So we, understandably, for a wine business, would see engagement spike Thursday night, Friday night, over the weekend, because that's the times when people are often feeling social and wanting to have a glass of wine.
Sure.
And therefore thinking about the brand or engaging with it in some way. Because the ads would often pick up over the weekend, then it was a case of, yeah, cool, can we just schedule someone to do a check once a day when we've got a campaign running? And that seemed to be enough for people, but I certainly could see the difference in the ad campaigns where we were actively responsive and those where we weren't.
Sure. Oh, that's really good to see. So when you are actively engaging with people via social media, whatever else it might be, whilst the campaign's running, you saw a spike in that sort of engagement, that sort of...
Definitely better results, yeah.
And again, it's not rocket science. We know that when there are more people commenting, whatever, it will go to their feed as well. It will go to their friends. It will just organically grow. So one of the things I know I like to try to tell people when they're putting together a campaign and they want to ask a question, you know, almost encourage a response. And even if you don't want to know the answer, get people responding so that they engage and then more people come through. So.
Which is really difficult in an age of, especially like I think we're experiencing a period of social media apathy. People are a bit saturated by it. You know, I don't know many friends personally that actually post on Facebook very often. So getting that cut through when people are there for socialization, not really necessarily getting that socialization need met, and then you add advertising over the top.
Yeah.
It's a real delicate balance to actually get something that gets people talking.
Do you see any sort of particular trends that might be growing in social media or digital in general? Do you see, I mean, already just in the, 6 years you've been away from UC, I think it is, or maybe longer, for 6-7 years?
6 or 7, yeah.
6-7 years. We've seen whole platforms come and go. You know, TikTok's only a couple of years old, and now it's the number one website that people visit above Google, which is crazy to think about. But there's whole things that have come and gone. I mean, what are the sort of, either it's a trend, like you'll see more TikTok, or is it more, you know, we'll see more engagement stuff, we'll see more visual stuff, we'll see more, what are your thoughts as an expert in this area? Or
I think more visual stuff, and it is certainly going to be here to stay. You know, TikTok is one of the more recent ones, but before that was Vine, and before that, you know, like we've seen several iterations of this. It's, TikTok is remarkable because of its pervasiveness, not necessarily because it's extremely innovative as a platform. You know, definitely some new features there for sure. But yeah, I think the trends that interest me are probably less digital trends and more general consumerism trends. I think I, particularly in the circles I run in, like there's a lot of people who are super sustainability conscious, eco-conscious, looking at social responsibility, even looking at wanting to focus more on their well-being, that sort of thing. And a lot of that is leading to people turning off social more often, deleting apps from their phones, things like that. And so the idea of what can marketing look like in that space, it could be a vastly different landscape if those trends continue to grow, which I think they will.
Yeah, one of my PhD students who just finished middle of last year, the year before, sorry, looked at that relationship between social media and mental well-being, and dumbed down 100,000 words, which is really rude to do. But the work effectively said, if you lack self-control, then this is going to hurt you. If you have self-control and you're in control of it, life becomes easier. And one of the ways to regain control is to switch off the notifications. Because if, you know, your phone is buzzing and things like that, and you're constantly feeling anxious that you need to be engaged all the time, that is going to have a negative effect on you. But that's almost converse to what a marketer might want. And they might like, no, I want someone to be engaged because I'll either sell product or I'll sell my ideology or whatever else it might be. So it's a really tricky balance sometimes.
Yeah. The phrasing you just used was interesting because, you know, the idea of that almost indicates that someone has to be engaged in the channel first. So, you know, the phenomenon I just mentioned of people posting less often on Facebook, I'm not sure whether that's just my bubble or whether that's a pervasive phenomenon, but I believe it is more widespread. It's
pervasive,
The idea then is that people are actually switching off from the channel. So if they're switched off from the channel and they're not even engaged there, then advertising that doesn't feel like it adds anything is obviously going to be a level below
that.
You know, whereas TikTok, by its nature, is designed to be, if you're on it, you are engaged. That's an active activity, as opposed to doom scrolling is very much become a passive habit.
Yeah,
I think that definitely, that shift into, you're only on your phone if it's an active thing. You know, the ads in TikTok are still really noticeable, but you're at least scrolling past it very quickly because you are actively doing something as opposed to passively scrolling.
And I think that speaks a lot to the, maybe again, the traditionalist mindset of marketing is like, wow, there's lots of people on TikTok, let's put a TikTok ad out. No, because people can recognize it quickly and they'll scroll past it real quick.
Because a lot of them suck.
But, and this is maybe, again, this has led to the rise of these paid influencers as well, because it's obvious to spot an ad. So we will now use this person who is famous for being TikTok famous or whatever else, Insta famous, and we will get them to hold our product, and that's enough. And we see that, you know, in the early days of like Ariana Grande on Instagram, just holding a product would spike sales 1,000%, and that's all she needed to do. She didn't need to say buy Coca-Cola now, she just needed to hold a can of Coke, and that's enough.
Yeah, it's a halo effect almost, right? You're trading off of those people's reputations.
Yeah.
But they've built those reputations because they're making engaging content to begin with.
Correct.
And so I think there's also, there's a difference between paying an influencer to do an ad and actually having a genuine working relationship with them where they enjoy your product and they're happy to build it into things because it's more, you know, they value mm-hmm. that relationship a little bit more.
And maybe there's people listening who are kind of going, that just feels weird. Why would I want to engage with a brand? Why would I care about this? This mm-hmm. does something for me. But that's definitely not really the trend for a lot of people these days, in that they aren't just buying stuff. They want to buy stuff that reflects them. They want to buy stuff or use stuff that they believe is reflective of their own values and stuff.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
Definitely. I think people are looking for a better values alignment a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it's that social responsibility piece in particular, with fast fashion, you know, being a massive topic at the moment, in the sense of, yeah, you can't market more clothes when you're trying to be responsible. So a lot of those brands are feeling very hypocritical right now.
Well, yes, definitely something that is many people in the fashion industry are conscious of, but having the pressure of business success on top of that, it can be difficult.
Mm.
With regards to digital and with regards to moving forward, are there times you kind of look at a campaign online and go, what the hell were they thinking? are you as sick and twisted as I am, where you sit there going, how did that get through? Or did you create some of those yourself?
I have an example of this that's not digital, if you're open to this.
Absolutely. Look, I'm open to all the yarns.
A friend a day or two ago was telling me about stopping in a public toilet and seeing an ad on the back of the door in said public toilet for menstrual cups. But the content of the ad included a bunch of men dressed in tampon suits.
Okay.
So they had literally a cutout for the face, so you could see it was a human and dressed up
and
in
a guy
suit.
At that.
And a guy at that. So the copy below it was, these chaps are, and then had, you know, contributing to landfill waste and a bunch of negative connotations and things like that. And the friend retelling this just went, what on earth were they thinking? Why? And we had a brief corridor about it. And 2 minutes later, someone else chimed in and went, yeah, but we're talking about it.
Exactly. It's clearly worked. Sometimes the bad ads work. At the same time, I just feel for that poor person in the ad who was like, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make it. I'm going to be the next Chris Hemsworth. And they're like, I'm going to tampon thing on the back of a door.
I'm not sure who okayed the campaign. I'm not sure who wrote the brief.
Yeah.
But it had talkability.
And this is where some of the... I've met with so many brands who say, we just want to go viral.
Mm.
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, but at what cost?
At what cost? I can help you go viral, but it would destroy your brand name because we would have something so awful that would do that. At the same time, you can put all the effort in, like we've talked about, all the effort into something, and it could just flop and then do something stupid and crazy and silly, and suddenly that goes viral.
Mm.
And I guess if there's any part of the formula that really should be stable, it is that ability to connect with people. If you are connecting with people, the likelihood of them sharing, because it helps them connect with others, is going to be there. So you don't necessarily need to have humor, because we see a lot of emotional ads go out with no humor, but it's very connecting and people share those sort of thing.
I mean, it comes back to brand values in the end, right? If your brand value is to add a bit of fun and lightheartedness into people's lives, then yeah, by all means, do a TikTok dance, you know? But if you're trying to offer a more stable, supportive service, maybe then might not be right for you.
So the campaign never got launched, and I don't think it's not a problem for me to talk about. There's a lot of double negatives in it, but I'm just being careful. I was brought in to meet with a local marketing team that wanted the contract for the University of Canterbury, and they were putting together their campaign for how to attract students to come and study here. And their whole campaign was Find UC. I'm like, okay, because it's hard to find us. I don't know. But Find UC, which got shortened to FUC. And they thought this was hilarious. And so they had, and I thought, okay, we've got that idea. They'll move on very quickly when they realize. They had about 20 minutes of different ads that had FUC the whole time. FUC, FUC. So, and if we have a UK branch, it could be FUC. CUK or something like that. And I'm like, guys. And I ended up stopping them and saying, this could work for our student union because it's edgier, it's cool, that's fine. But for the university with a lot of international students, with a lot of parents who are influential, they are not going to send their students, their kids to a university that basically has fuck all over all the paraphernalia. And they just didn't get it. They just didn't get it. But it's sometimes...
It doesn't exactly scream prestigious research institution, you know?
So if our brand values are trying to be prestigious research institute, a safe place your children can come and study, a cool place you can hang out, and we've just got FUC the whole time, which is a little bit of a rep-off on FCUK as well, let's be fair. It's trying to be edgy when we're not. It didn't seem to align. And so it kind of, right back to the start, you've almost been talking the whole way through. If you don't have strategy, if you don't have a plan, if you don't have a purpose, if you don't have values, then it doesn't matter what the content it is. It's going to be confusing. It's not going to be as engaging, whatever else it might be. And there's a great website out there. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but something like Will Robots Steal My Job or Will Robots Take My Job and .com. And you can put in your job and it'll tell you the likelihood of robots taking your job. So if you are in haulage and freight, there's a 99.7% chance robots will take your job in the next 20 years. So it's time for you to reskill. When it comes to analysis of data, 99% chance robots will take your job. But when it comes to content creation, that is one of the safest jobs because it still needs to be imagination, creativity, which is not as easy to replicate in AI. It's that kind of the heart of what you bring. You can't do this on paper or on Facebook or on Instagram unless you've got a plan ahead of time.
It's inherently human what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the human aspect is sort of the first thing. And a lot of that is interesting because there is so much gut feel in amongst the data.
Do you still, regardless of all the planning, there's still got to be an element of responsiveness there. If there's a trend happening, you can jump on the back of that reasonably
quickly. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you have to be almost.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, you know, there's examples of... you know, we saw with the Black Lives Matter movement that a lot of brands would possibly be in the basket of jumping on that as a trend rather than doing it genuinely, and you can see the difference.
Yeah.
People that are doing it in a tokenistic way will get chewed up and spat out. There's a difference between jumping on a trending song on TikTok versus doing something that should actually be treated with a little bit more gravitas and taken seriously.
Taking a huge social issue and profiteering from it is again, this is not about me, but I always seem to bring it back to my students at the moment because I'm so proud of my students. I've got a PhD student at the moment who's looking at how brands recover from scandals online. Like when something goes online and it becomes a bit scandalous, how do they recover? And one of the things she's found is that if it's happened once, that doesn't go away. The next time there's an issue, it comes back. So United Airlines, as an example, when the videos went out about smashing the guitar and the guy made the viral song about his guitar being smashed, whatever, that was brought out when they dragged the doctor off the plane because they were overbooked. It gets dragged out when there's every... So it almost becomes a series of scandalous events, which with online stays there forever. It's really difficult to scrub the internet.
Definitely. And I think there's a... you know, I think if something does go wrong, you have to be meticulous about taking responsibility and holding yourselves accountable and showing that progress is something that has to be genuine as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just sweep things under the rug and hope that it gets better because people do remember.
I want to finish in my traditional way of asking, is there anything, no, I'm sure there is there stuff that gives you hope for the future? Is there stuff that makes you go, yep, I'm really excited to see this happen. Personally, professionally, whatever it might be.
I mean, the intersection of personally and professionally for me is that as I'm moving into consultancy, I'm able to pick and choose projects that align with my values. And I think that movement on a broader scale excites me. You know, we've seen so much more awareness through the pandemic of people setting good boundaries for themselves, looking after themselves a lot better, acknowledging that the 9-to-5 no longer works for them, that being in an office is sort of a bit redundant for a lot of people. And I think that those sort of trends, the well-being trends, the sustainability, eco-friendliness, social responsibility, like those are the things I'm interested to see where they go and how far we can take them. You know, I think we've still got plenty of work to do as a society, and I think the work that marketing can do as part of that is really interesting.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, that sounds like a perfect place to finish. I'm really, really glad you had the chance to talk to me, Emma, before you disappear on your various adventures right in between different things in life right now. So it was so cool to hear your thoughts, get your focado on this. Really appreciate your time, and best of luck with the next adventure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.